Okay, so this is going to be my Fork in the Road episode with Michael Colleary. Michael and I recorded our normal episode before this, and you can listen to that, which was us talking about being dads, etc., and his dad and his family life, and what it's like for him as a screenwriter and a member of Hollywood movie and TV life to be a dad to his two fantastic daughters. But this will be our Fork in the Road episode where he and I basically just geek out on movies pretty much. So a really cool, fun little sit down in both episodes. But this one I particularly loved because I could basically talk about movies with almost anybody for hours on end. So I hope you enjoy it as well. And here we go with the Fork in the Road. Basically, I'm at the point where I want to do your glean from you your top five lists. This will be kind of the closer fun part. So, and maybe you, I don't know if you can do these off the cuff, but top five movies.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Top five movies.
It's hard to, would it be easier to do 10?
It changes every day. Like last night we watched, Shannon and I watched The Lady Eve, the Preston Sturges movie. I mean, it's just a perfect film.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Let me try though. Goodfellas.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
Top five, because I know you are a fan of the classics and you have all that. So maybe it will make it easier if we do top five pre-90 and top five post-90.
Okay.
90 is a decent benchmark
sure,
for that.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Pre-90. All right. I got to go with The Third Man. It's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Another classic.
Yes.
The Godfather, of course.
Of course.
Oh, my gosh. Pre-90. The Road Warrior.
Oh, yeah.
Love that movie. Going back even further, oh my good Lord, The Seven Samurai.
Yes.
Oh gosh, The General, the old Buster Keaton movie.
Mm-hmm.
Dirty Dozen, tons of war movies. The Dirty Dozen, where Eagles Dare, love all those sort of secret mission movies. Good gosh. Oh, American Graffiti and Jaws, of course. Star Wars, anything, all the Star Wars movies.
Wow, you
the Shawshank Redemption
went through
that
like
was before
10 before you got to Star Wars.
Yeah, when was Shawshank? That was like got to be the night.
That was 90. That was nineties.
Nineties,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, gosh, where do you begin? Where do
I don't
you
know.
End?
It's okay, impossible. So post-90s.
Post-90s, go all Goodfellas, mm-hmm. and I love Casino.
Mm-hmm.
These do not make me popular here at home. I'm not allowed to watch them.
No, you're watching those on your own.
Pulp Fiction, of course. Mm-hmm.
So let me stop you there.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction. Okay. We're obviously going to go into a lot of film stuff here.
Sure. Whatever you like.
Not forever, but as a screenwriter, and I used to love, and obviously, like, I loved him. Tarantino was great. And, you know, I got into that whole, I've eat up everything Tarantino feeds me or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the information came out regarding his, is he plagiarizing these things? Is he paying homage to these things? Is it the line between theft and respect or whatever? Did you ever kind of, I don't know how deeply you got into that. I'm just wondering, as a screenwriter, mm-hmm. If you paid any.
Well, I have never met the man.
Yes.
But I've had a whole relationship with his work mm-hmm. and my perception of him,
mm-hmm.
Which quite understandably began with insane jealousy.
Yes.
When Reservoir Dogs came along. And so I couldn't wait to see the Chinese film City on Fire.
Yes.
Which was a quote unquote inspiration mm-hmm. for Reservoir Dogs. I wanted it so desperately to be a word for word depiction that Reservoir Dogs lifted.
Right.
And it wasn't.
Right.
And I came out feeling like the guy has definitely has his own thing going,
mm-hmm.
regardless of the fact that Yeah, he's a film nut.
Right.
I mean, we talked about Shane Black, and I think Tarantino's like the next iteration of that, which is this kind of what do you call that? A savant, mm-hmm. you know, of someone who's watched old VHS movies to the point where it's like that's his brain, that's now all his neural pathways are now all these old Hong Kong shoot 'em up movies and Sonny Chiba movies or something.
Right.
You know? So but Pulp Fiction, I didn't really maybe there are so Reservoir Dogs, I was like, I can kind of pull it from here and there.
Yeah.
But it was a good movie. It was cool. It was cool.
Yeah.
But Pulp Fiction I thought was a masterpiece.
Right.
And I didn't feel like it was like anything I'd ever seen before.
Yeah.
And it was exciting and interesting on so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't love Jackie Brown, which I think was his next one, maybe.
I believe so.
Yeah, I didn't love that. I thought it was okay. And then I don't know what else, maybe if he did anything else in there. And then he went off to make Kill Bill.
Right.
And I remember
he had all his Robert Rodriguez stuff in between that.
Right, right. He did Dust from Dust from Dust Till Dawn and True have that Romance thing with Four came Rooms. Out and, yeah. Well,
was that the name of it? With the
Four Rooms, right.
Four
he was everywhere.
Directors.
He was suddenly everywhere. And as an actor, which I didn't find him that compelling as an actor. Although I thought he was pretty good in From Dusk Till Dawn as the real creepy brother.
Yeah.
But he didn't do anything.
Right.
You know, he just kept his mouth shut, which made him more interesting.
More menacing, yeah.
And then, you know, the saga of Kill Bill began.
Right.
And again, I'm not involved with any of this, but I would read in the trades, oh, you know, it's over budget. Oh, they're still shooting it. Oh, mm-hmm. now it's going to be two movies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, it's the end.
Yeah.
It's the end of Quentin.
Like,
you know, he had his moment and he's just too crazy and too erratic.
Yeah.
And this is going to be who makes two movies? If he had said three movies, I would have said, well, okay, but who makes two movies about the same thing? And then I saw it and I went, okay.
Makes sense.
He's won me over forever.
Yeah.
I can never, ever challenge the guy's profound genius, mm-hmm. regardless of where it comes from. And I haven't loved everything he's done mm-hmm. since then. I'm in the minority.
Hateful Eight. Did you see that?
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Inglourious Basterds, I know, is his most successful. Maybe he's had maybe Django's more successful now or something like that.
Yeah.
But Inglourious Basterds, you know, to me, it's two movies.
I
mean, I know people love, my writing partner loves it. So many people love the movie.
Yeah.
I found the movie, as much as I enjoyed it,
mm-hmm.
I found it a little frustrating because it was two different movies, both of which I really liked.
Yeah.
But they were, didn't
very
go
separate.
Together.
Yeah,
you know, the thing burning the theater down and mm-hmm. all that stuff, I mean, that was fantastic.
Right.
But then you're going to kill Hitler?
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're going to kill Hitler, how can you not have Brad Pitt kill Hitler?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's the Apache. So, okay, great. Have Brad, the Aldo the Apache, scalp Hitler.
Yeah.
I mean, why not do that?
Yeah.
So I walked out going, like, my head was spinning like everybody else, but, oh my God, the scene in the bar.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it just does not get better than
right.
that.
Right. That was a great, and I probably will now watch that on Netflix tonight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a cool movie.
I keep passing by it and saying, I need to watch
this
again.
So you've never seen it?
I have seen it.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to spoil it.
No, I think I gobbled that down like three times when I first saw it because I wanted to keep trying to put that together.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing it the first time and thinking that and saying, well, maybe I need to watch it again, and I failed somehow.
Yeah, it was weird. I don't know Quentin Tarantino from Adam, but maybe it's like a really interesting insight into his mind
mm-hmm.
because on the one hand it's this just great movie about not the Holocaust per se, but about the oppression of Jews and Nazis and you know them coming into the farmhouse. I mean that whole thing with that whole line of Shoshanas was fantastic.
Yeah.
But then again there was the sort of the silly 70s ripoff of the Dirty Dozen.
Right.
Alongside it. And,
right.
And that was fun too. I mean, Brad Pitt was fun and the Jew Bear and all that stuff. I mean, that was kind of a cool Brad Pitt and his accent and everything like that. But again, that was like a cheapy 70s World War II movie that was made in Spain for a dime, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
Anyway, but
Brad Pitt and his accent, which is amazing because I was just talking about what was the movie that he did? Has the word devils in it with Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah, right. The Devil's Own, maybe?
Yeah.
Is that it? Something
he
like that?
Was Like, did you see it?
It's been a while. He was Irish.
Yes,
right?
And his accent was awful. I mean, it was so bad.
Yeah, he. That was not a great movie. That should have been. It was like going to be great. It should have been great, but it was not great.
Yeah, it was kind of during that time where he, I think Meet Joe Black was maybe not too far extended from that, and there was Meet Joe Black, there was that, and then there was another movie where it was kind of like, okay, can Brad Pitt act? Is he any good? Something's going on here.
And right.
I don't remember what it was after that that kind of became a, okay, he can actually act, but I remember that break where he was just miserable and things.
Yeah, interesting.
Okay, so anyways, I stopped you in the middle of your list, which was Pulp Fiction,
Goodfellas,
Shawshank, Goodfellas, Casino.
Yeah. Oh, The Matrix. I love The Matrix. Mm-hmm. Was awesome.
The original only, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
The original
just
only.
Sure.
I think the next two kind of got lost in their personal problems, and not problems, but they had the brothers who went on to become, I mean, one was changing his sexuality.
Oh.
Larry Wachowski became Lana Wachowski, and I think that was all happening around that time.
Did not know any of that. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And of course the studio wanted their movies.
They obviously got completely devoured in doing new technology. Right. I mean, that scene where there's 50 Keanu Reeves, and even at that point, that whole elementary school or whatever fight scene where there were a bunch of them and he pulled out the bar and was hitting them. I remember even thinking there was a difference between the stuff in the first Matrix and thinking, whoa, this is incredible and looks incredible. Where with that, it was kind of like, okay, I've never seen this before, but it doesn't look great.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, this is a little too wonky.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like they kind of got on that path too of trying to push the envelope a little too much.
He could fly and he could, you know, it's like there were no limits anymore.
Right.
Which kind of worked against it. I mean, it was fun in the first one to see him trying to exceed his limits.
Yeah.
But then when he did that, I mean, he wasn't ever going to die, really.
Right.
So what was at stake?
But, yeah.
Anyway, there were a lot of great movies last year. I thought a lot of movies I really enjoyed. Ex Machina and...
so good.
Such a good movie.
I was thinking about that last night because I was thinking about us sitting down and talking, and I remember you talking about that, and I can't remember... Oh, I was actually in my kid's room and laying when we put Sawyer to bed, who is 3... one of us, and it's usually me, lays with him till he falls asleep. And I remember hearing a noise in the room and thinking, was that just a normal noise? And I have a paranoia that is in a small box usually in the corner of my mind. And that opened up, and I thought, which doesn't tangle well with my ability to create large scenes of things, what if there's somebody in the closet right now? And immediately I thought of this person that I didn't hear another noise, very slowly creeping up on me and very slowly putting a knife in me, which made me immediately think of that movie and thinking, oh, yeah, I know that Michael loved that movie.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
But that's, sorry if we're spoiling it for any of you, but that scene was just crazy.
We're not saying who exactly got the knife.
Yes.
That was a fun movie. And in fact, we watched it here because Shannon's mom is a big movie buff and she came down to visit, and I'd gone to see, I think Ex Machina is rated R, and I had gone seen it by myself, and I think maybe Shannon and I went to see it. So anyway, it was playing on pay-per-view and her mom had never seen it. And her mom likes scary movies. I said, oh, well, you should watch Ex Machina. And Rowan, my oldest, who's a movie, both the girls like movies. She came in and watched it too. And I was a little like, well, okay, but you know, it's mostly the intensity and there's a little violence. And at the end of it, Rowan said, that's how it ends?
Yeah.
That's how it ends? She got so excited to think that a movie doesn't just wrap up neatly.
Yeah.
You know, that suddenly something could happen that is not a happy ending, particularly, or a challenging ending. And she got very stimulated by that. She went and watched that movie like a bunch more times. Because I think it kind of blew her mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember feeling that way because when I used to work at Tower, I worked at Tower Records and Video.
Oh, wow.
For 5 or 6 years, had a couple of little breaks in there, but I worked in the video side, and we would give off sections to different employees, and nobody wanted the foreign section. And we would have to, if it was your section, you had to kind of keep it up and you had to do some of the ordering for it or whatever.
Oh, fun.
And I had no experience really with foreign movies other than Channel 5, KTLA. Was it KTLA back then? Maybe. With Kung Fu. Uh-huh. And I always loved Kung Fu movies. Uh-huh. And I think there was actually Kung Fu Theater was maybe the name of it.
Yeah.
But that was the extent of it. And I went through one day and I said, if this is my section, I should know it. I'm going to start with the letter A. And I decided to just watch all the films in the foreign section.
Oh, brilliant.
From A on. I stopped at like letter C and started bouncing around because there was so much crap in the section that really shouldn't have even been in there. But watched some amazing films. And I remember thinking, especially with French and Italian movies, Spanish movies and whatnot as well, but thinking, wow, like so many of these are not having a happy, tied up in a bow ending. And it was so different from what I was used to.
French movies. You ever see Wages of Fear?
I don't think so.
That was remade as Sorcerer by William Friedkin.
Okay.
And Wages of Fear is sort of a famous French movie, I think from the 50s or 60s, but it's like the most French movie you've ever seen. It's this totally existential. I mean, it's not boring by any means, but you know, four guys in a trying to get out of a crappy backwater in South America volunteer to drive trucks of nitroglycerin to a wildcat well that's burning out of control.
Wow.
And so the whole thing is about that journey trying to get those trucks, because if they succeed, you know, the company will pay their way out of the country. Otherwise, they're too poor to get out of the country. And the whole thing is, so the whole thing becomes about this meditation on life and death. And it, you know, the end is completely French. And
I'll have to add that to the list then.
Speaking of, you reminded me about great movies, Kung Fu Hustle.
Oh, brilliant. So good.
Movie. Oh, that's got to be on my list.
Yeah.
Kung Fu Hustle's fantastic.
All of his, I went through a stage, and this was when I was coming up here frequently and hanging out with some of my friends who are writers and whatever. And that was when I started going back into Kung Fu films again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got into Shaolin Soccer and Kung Fu Hustle.
There's a movie out right now.
Oh, really?
The Mermaid. Yeah. I don't know if it's playing here. It was a huge hit in China. Gigantic.
Wow.
Hit in China. But the domestic release was apparently pretty fumbled.
Huh.
And I think it's playing in New York right now. But it's another kind of like Chinese fantasy action kind of fantasy, The Mermaid.
Oh, I love his movies. They're fantastic.
And I just found this movie by coincidence called What We Do in Shadows. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that?
I've heard the name of it. But
it's a mockumentary about, it's like the Real World, the MTV Real World series, kind of like that, inspired by that. But it's about three or four vampires who live.
Yes, I remember hearing a tiny bit about it. Yeah.
and I laughed. I just never stopped laughing. It's so funny.
Awesome.
Because it goes after a lot of those tropes of those TV reality shows where everything is so fraught with emotional, people are nitpicking at each other.
Yeah.
You don't do the dishes and all this stuff. But it's vampires.
Yeah.
So it's pretty funny. Pretty funny. Yeah. I'll definitely worth a look.
Out.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go to your other side, TV shows.
Oh, okay. I'm kind of a latecomer to the TV revolution that we've been going through in the last so many years. I chalk that up to being a parent.
Yeah.
Because there's just only so much time. But now, oh my Lord. So Sopranos. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, I never got into Mad Men. And I could only stand to watch literally half of Breaking Bad. Because it was making me so tense.
Yeah.
It was making me so tense that I literally said, I can't watch this anymore.
Which you should now that you can finish it. And you told me, and I'm proud to let you know that I am about halfway through Mr. Robot now.
Oh, great show.
Which is so good.
Yeah.
And if you can watch, I mean, Breaking Bad is definitely a little more tense than that. And I think I'm at a spot where the tension is going to go up even another notch in Mr. Robot.
Okay.
Which I won't say anything in case somebody's watching it. But it's basically when the prison guy, the guy in prison, puts it together. So
he just put it together. So he's still in prison.
He's still in prison.
Oh, you have a, there's so much.
Yeah.
I don't want to overhype it, but yeah, the show just gets darker and darker and darker. It's so good. Yeah, yeah. So well done. I love that. That's a great show, Mr. Robot. Can't wait for that. Just caught up finally to the second season of Fargo.
Oh, I really, and I'm a huge, like, if there was any team or director or whatever, I would be a little hard pressed, but I would say I would almost automatically go to Coen Brothers.
Yeah.
And which isn't to say I will gobble up everything they write. I didn't love Intolerable Cruelty. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some stuff that I didn't, but Fargo, I loved.
Well, if you love Fargo, what's amazing about this show is and that's another one, Noah Hawley, who gets created by credit for the show and wrote like all the first season mm-hmm. and direct them. Burning jealousy about Noah Hawley. I couldn't wait for the TV Fargo season to be a disaster. Mm-hmm. Man, is it great. Just great. And not only does it evoke the movie,
mm-hmm.
it also has its totally own thing going.
Mm-hmm.
But they also are very careful and kind of loving about dropping all these sort of references to the Coen brothers,
uh-huh.
not just to the first movie, but to the Coen brothers.
Really?
Yeah. And if you're a fan of the Coen brothers, you start to see, oh yeah, that's from Raising Arizona. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that was from Big Lebowski. And oh yeah, that was for that.
Oh,
cool. You'd have to know the movies.
Yeah.
It's like a musical choice or a tiny little moment, or, I mean, I'm sure there's tons I don't get.
Right. Right.
But they're in there. Huh. And the second season, the first season I devoured, and the second season I watched like three or four. I'm not the biggest. Kristen Dunst has a big part in it. And
yeah.
I she's perfectly fine, but I don't, but everyone else is sort of like, you know, they're actors and they're kind of famous, but you don't quite recognize mm-hmm. them, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so it lives in this realm of like, of reality.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of her. And so I can't get past that it's Kristen Dunst,
uh-huh.
but she's quite good in the show.
Yeah.
And I ended up watching them all and, man, it's like they nailed the '70s. It's like, like a real, they just got into the '70s. It's weird. And in very subtle ways, they pick some very kind of interesting quintessential '70s. Ronald Reagan makes an appearance and on the campaign trail and stuff. It doesn't really spoil anything, but there's some other things I won't mention, but quite good. It's really well done, really super well done. I mean, it's amazing. I watch some of these shows and I go, this is better than any movie I've ever seen.
Right.
You look at it, it's scary when you're a writer and you look at it and go, I can't do that. I don't think I could ever do that.
Yeah.
Like Mr. Robot. It's like, I don't know if I could ever wrap my mind around that.
So what has he done before Mr. Robot?
The writer?
Yeah.
I don't think anything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so he popped out of nowhere with
He's
that.
Like a, he's a, talk about a savant.
Yeah.
I think I looked him up on IMDb because I'd never heard him. Sam, I think is something or other his name is, but I never heard of him.
Huh.
And, you know, and I expected to go and find, oh, yeah, 6 years on... on X-Files and 5 years on Homeland.
Yeah,
and five,
yeah.
You know, like these list of all the greatest shows ever on television. The guy, I think, had written, directed like one movie. So clearly he's someone to keep an eye on past this thing because he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Or someone in there does. Let me see. What else have I seen lately that I've liked besides that? I saw watched Fargo. We watched all of Parks and Rec. Willa, the little one, got us into Parks and Rec.
I could not. I was watching The Office at the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, The Office was going on, and then Parks and Rec came on. And the first season seems very much like the first American season of The Office, which worked so hard to do the English version as the American version, and... I liked the dryness of the English version better, and I don't know if it was that I liked Ricky Gervais better than I liked Steve Carell as that character, but it definitely changed. I mean, over the course, you know, once they broke away and they were their own show, it was totally different from that first season, and I felt that way with Parks and Rec, and I felt that it was kind of that dryness, and I didn't love her as the main role in it. And then I've seen some episodes of subsequent seasons and laughed my head off at them and loved the characters in them, or whatever.
You nailed it exactly right.
So I should skip the first...
This first season is like 6 episodes.
Yeah.
And they definitely play the extreme version. Like, you laugh at them a little bit, especially her.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a moment in the first season where someone says, gosh, you know, Leslie, you're kind of crazy. And she goes, and so they played that extreme part.
Yeah.
But in the subsequent seasons, they, like The Office, they humanize them to death. And it's so, it's a very sweet show. And the relationship she ends up having with Nick Offerman, Ron Swanson, is hilarious.
Yeah.
What a great character. It's really quite a good show.
I'll have to skip past that. It's that way with Doctor Who with me. I know people love Doctor Who.
Yeah, I've never gotten into it. It's too much, you know?
No, and I come up from a place where I did not like Star Trek, the TV show, at all. I just thought it looked, and I wasn't, you know, I was born in 72, so I was a little bit older than it, but I just thought everything looked so wonky and so just low budge. And I can deal with low budge, but I just didn't really like it. And that's the way I watched the first maybe 4 episodes of Doctor Who. And I keep thinking, it's like a farce, right? I just didn't really get it, and I couldn't get into it. And I have people who are like, you have to watch it. It's so good. And it gets so good in all the different doctors. And I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever get into it.
Well, it's a commitment now. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
If you say, oh, okay, I'm going to, you know, and that's a lot of reasons why I think people don't start, because you go, oh shit, it's been 5 episodes of Mad Men or 10 seasons. I mean,
yeah,
it's like, I don't want to start because if I'm going to feel like I have to watch every single one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Willa, when she got her iPad, she started watching. She's the binger. She'll start at the beginning and watch them all. And she watched all 5 or 6 since Christmas, watched all 5 or 6 seasons of Once Upon a Time.
Okay.
Which she loves.
Yeah.
Loves to pieces. Yeah. And we've been watching the last season of Downton Abbey.
Okay. And?
I've seen bits and pieces over the years to know obviously what it is. This season, they're sort of teeing up all the kind of happy endings.
Right.
I think they're giving kind of the viewers what they want.
Yeah.
It's a sense
tying
I'm getting.
Tying it up for them.
Yeah. But it's good, you know, it's really well done, and Maggie Smith's fantastic.
Yeah.
And of course she gets all the good lines
right
at this point.
I haven't really full bore given that an effort.
Yeah,
I have for some of those other, and I love English stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I love BBC, and I was raised on Monty Python, because of my parents. I raised myself on Monty Python.
Right. Sure. Who didn't?
And not to say that that's anything like these other things, but, I tried with Sherlock.
Yeah, didn't watch it.
I'm probably 5 or 6 episodes in, and it still isn't hitting me the way that I feel like it should be.
You watch Orphan Black?
No.
Orphan Black's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm friendly with one of the actors who's in it, and he's great, but the show's owned by the young woman who plays all the clones. I mean, she plays like 6 roles. And you can't tell, quite apart from the technical aspect of it, you can't tell that it's not different people.
Uh-huh.
It's incredible. Huh. I mean, she obviously looks the same.
Yeah.
But the personalities have evolved among these clones, where they have their own lives now, and it's impacted how they interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one's a geek and one's a housewife and, you know, all that stuff. But it's incredible.
Huh.
That's a really incredible. What was I going to say? Before I got on that. Downton Abbey. And, you know, when I was a kid, there was Upstairs, Downstairs. That was that was the big show that was on PBS, Masterpiece Theater, with Alistair Cook or introducing them every week.
Yeah.
And so that's what Downton Abbey is. It's like a riff on Upstairs, Downstairs.
Okay.
We watch it together. I mean, we started watching it as a family because it was something we all
kind Which of is enjoyed. Something you all could connect with, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is the problem with our home, is that Missy doesn't really, she has a hard time watching intense television, which so much of it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a hard time really jumping into sitcom or more light TV. Like, I love Everybody Loves Raymond. Mm-hmm. I can watch that show. It's funny to me, and especially as a father now, I didn't really love it until then. I have no desire to watch Friends, to rewatch Friends right now.
Right. They watch Friends. Yeah. That's another aspect of the parenting, is I'm the only man in the house.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, and I've got two girls who are now teenagers, basically.
Right.
And so there's definitely a subtle aspect of when I'm not really welcome in the room with the television.
Yeah,
because my mere presence kind of harshes their enjoyment of something. And Friends is one of those things.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't like me to be there when they watch Friends, because so much of the content is sexual.
Yeah.
And so much of it is kind of risque.
Right.
And they don't want daddy sitting there while they giggle about certain jokes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They don't, you know, they get embarrassed.
Yeah.
So I can't be there sometimes when they watch Friends. They kick me out.
Are there some of their stuff that they're watching that you basically are there and are not enjoying, but are there to be a part of that time and you are Mystery Science Theatering it? Or do you basically just keep quiet?
I have to pick my battles.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they don't want my commentary.
Yeah.
And certainly stuff that's more adult, they would rather I did not draw attention to it in any way, shape, or form. Once in a while, I'll say, you know, I don't know if this is appropriate. And then usually I get the boot at that point. I just,
well, Shannon, you just have to leave.
Shannon will invite me to leave.
Typically. Yeah.
She's totally on their side about all of that.
She, right.
They, I'll be in the doing something else, and I'll hear laughing from the living room, and I'll hear Shannon go, "Oh, Joey," you know. It's like, I don't think you're maybe necessarily protecting our children from the bad influence there. But you know what? I one of the things that is different from my upbringing is my kids know the facts of life. You know, we've had more than the chat.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't tend to take the lead on it, although Shannon tends to take the lead on all that stuff. However, I have been engaged to answer questions from time to time.
Yeah.
Stuff that my parents certainly never spoke to me about, or my siblings about.
Right.
I want my kids to have, I'm not afraid of their sexuality particularly. Yeah. I mean, I want them to, I'm afraid of them being ignorant about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I want them to have the information. I don't want them to feel like that's something that is shameful or scary and something that daddy can't know about
we've got to hide all this. And
I'm more appropriate in that regard than my wife. But you know, we keep I believe a healthy separation between, mm-hmm. You know, our appreciation of that aspect of our lives and our kids.
Yeah.
But we don't want to make it something that's off limits. And certainly Shannon will talk to them about whatever they want to talk about. There's not like we don't want them to go out forth not knowing stuff and making bad choices and bad decisions, et cetera, as people probably say. So
yeah.
Anyway, so they're well versed in that kind of humor at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and their friends are too. And they would be anyway.
Right.
At this point. I mean, by the time they're 15, if they don't know all this sort of secret sexual stuff.
Yeah.
That I had, you know, that we were always, I mean, my buddies were always finding Playboy magazines and everything like that.
Oh, yeah.
There would be something weird if they hadn't been exposed to it. I mean, that's kind of where I've come out on it, is if they don't know about it, there's something wrong.
Right.
So
you would be an Amish family.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Much, I guess.
The only Amish in LA.
Yeah.
It's like the Beverly Hillbillies or something like that. So.
All right. Well, I think we've basically covered
whatever you like.
Everything we can cover.
Okay. This was great fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talking about movies. So I'm talking about movies all day.
Oh, yeah. We could make a whole friggin' two podcasts out of that pretty much.
Well, maybe you will.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for sitting down with me.
Anytime. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. I want to thank Michael for being on again. It was great to be able to sit down with him as both of our families basically played around in his backyard outside of where we were. You could probably hear some kids at some point during the normal episode or during this one. Yeah, Michael was a fantastic guest on, and I could probably do a whole nother fork in the road talking about movies with him. So again, you can find Daddy Unscripted online at daddyunscripted.com. That's where the original blog was hosted as well. So there are some older posts that are just blog posts before this became a podcast. You can also find Daddy Unscripted on Twitter as well as on Facebook under the same name. You can find us if you're an Android user. You can use Stitcher to listen to us. Or if you're an iPhone user, you can use your podcast app and find Daddy Unscripted. I would love for you either way to go to iTunes, find Daddy Unscripted, subscribe, leave a review and a rating. Those things, they super duper help me get this podcast out to more listeners, which hopefully enables the podcast to get some really cool guests on, to be able to branch outside of just people that I know, maybe get some people that I have never ever met before, but have some really cool dad stories, dad advice, whatever, and enable me to talk to some people in some very different walks of life about what it's like to be a dad. So you can also send me an email, daddyunscripted@gmail.com, if you have any of those people that you would like me to sit down and talk with. I hope you enjoyed this fork in the road with Michael as much as I did. I actually had a really good time recording it. And actually, and I'm not just saying this, I enjoyed listening back to it while I was editing it. So I hope you did. And there should be plenty of other episodes for you to be able to listen to. So thanks again.